But remember that the legs matter just for the first day, maybe too. The rest is up in your head.
Hello and welcome to Construyendo Ultraciclismo. My name is Borja Ascón and this is a podcast about cycling and ultracycling in particular. A program usually in Spanish but today in English because we have a very special guest, the real king of Morocco, Justinas Lebeika, who is already back at home after winning a few days ago the last edition of the Atlas Mountain Race. I hope you enjoyed this interview and hopefully you learn also from it, because this is the whole point of the podcast, to hear the experience in races and events of other riders and to learn from them and also get inspired by their amazing stories. If you are interested in listening to other interviews in English that we did in the last 3 years, you can scroll down to episodes 3, 13 and 18 where we hosted Uva, Justinas and Anna Orens respectively. So now it's time to welcome the great Justinas Lebeika.
Hello, my man. Hello, you beautiful people. It's been a while, but I'm back. Yeah.
You're back. You're back at home, right? After this adventure in Morocco.
Yeah, I'm back to winter. I'm back to work and back to everything. And almost back to training. Recovery
is really so quick.
It's done. Yeah, I've been. The shape wasn't that bad, you know, so when you're in shape, so the recovery doesn't take so long either. And I think that choices that I've done for this race, they also made that I was fresher at the finish, probably.
Really? Mm. There is so much to talk about in this interview. We have this, we're planning this video call, not for a podcast, but for ourselves, for so many months. And now finally we can do it. There are so many questions in there, so many things I want to hear from you.
Always takes time, but I'm very happy to see you, my friend.
Yeah, man. I said at the beginning, welcome back to the podcast, because you've been already twice here. First time was, I don't know, 3 years ago, when you were just a newbie here in the ultra world. It was your first season. You did the three Transiberica races, and yeah, we presented you here in the podcast. And then the second time was when you became officially the real king of Rwanda. That was when you won the race across Rwanda, and now we have the real king of Morocco.
Shit, looks like Africa is the place to be for me. Eh?
It is.
I have a good luck in Africa. Yeah, but it's incredible. Like, yeah, the journey that has been already, yeah, from when I started 3 years ago, and now it's 4 years ago. So this is my fourth season in ultra cycling. Yeah. So the journey is being long, yeah, but very, very beautiful.
How many things have changed in these 4 years?
A lot.
The followers, at least.
Yeah. But I'm still at the same job. You know, this is a strange one, because I thought about it exactly today, that when I started working here, when I'm working to became the manager of this long-term care house here in Tolga, then I was about to do my first ultra race. Oh, so I've been this at this job, everything happened like while I was working doing the job. Besides that, my ultra cyclist career has developed to where it is now.
No, don't quit the job.
Yeah. I can't. No.
Yeah, probably many people think, people that don't really know you but they follow you in social media, they might think you're a professional, I know you train like a professional, you live like a professional, but you have a full-time job besides cycling, apart from cycling, which is just your hobby, cycling. And this full-time job is like 40 hours a week, like any regular job?
Yeah, it's 37 and a half, yeah. So it's sometimes it's the same amount of hours that I train per week. Nah, but I was in rush, you know, like yeah, that's why I always arrive just a day or two before the start, and I always leave like exactly after the finish, like the day after. Usually there has been races where I left and I was back at work when the first top five haven't finished yet, and this year in Atlas again, like Friday we got the news that the race will not start, that the race is postponed by 24 hours, and I had already booked my flights on Wednesday because I thought that I'm gonna be at finish on Tuesday, so I would still have a evening to recover, and next day I would leave. But because the whole race was moved by one day, we started on Saturday evening, and then I knew that I'll have to ride fast. So I missed my flights. I arrived to the finish. I was at finish at 1 o'clock, I think, or something before 1 o'clock on Wednesday, and my flights were leaving in 40 minutes. And
I bet you still try to catch it.
I tried in the morning when I still had like 100 kilometers left, and it was quite an early morning, so I thought like there is a chance, there is a possibility, but again then the sun came up, it became so hot, the kilometers were just not going anywhere. It was just like you ride and nothing happens. It's still 50, there's still 60, there's never ending.
Really, are there so many contrasts, like from up in the mountains minus degrees, and then in the coast so hot?
It was, yeah, it was big contrast, like 35 degrees difference, I think, from day to night.
Whoa.
Yeah, because I think the lowest I've seen, it was about 2 degrees. It was quite cold night. And the warmest, it was about 40.
So as bad as in Badlands.
Exactly. And this is February, and I come from like minus 30 degrees. So it's like my body was in shock the first day. It definitely felt like, what the fuck is going on? Because if we would have started into the rain, into the mud, into all this stuff, it would have probably helped me, because yeah, the tougher the conditions, the better for me. But now when we started in the dry roads, and first the race to the checkpoint one, it was a road race. It was we stayed on the roads, and it was tempo was crazy. Like we were riding proper road race. I think we have never arrived to the checkpoint one in such a big group.
But was it the official route, or they did a D route
because of the we had two diversions. We had to make two big diversions. So I think the race got longer by 50 kilometers because of those diversions.
But not as hard, or?
No, because they were on the road, you know. So we were riding, yeah, we were riding fast.
This is the first time you went with a mountain bike, well, with a full suspension bike and a flat handlebar. What were you thinking on those first kilometers?
But I knew, you know, like I knew, because this is my third time in Atlas, so I have experience, and this is actually also why I brought the flat bar and full suspension bike, because I wanted to see if the comfort really gives you speed at the last days. So if you stay more comfortable during the days, I changed the shoes. The for the first time I was riding in a in like a trail shoes, you know, like a really comfortable ones with quite flexible sole. So I had flat handlebars, which also gives you more comfortable position and more control in those technical descents. And also I had like, yeah, full suspension. But one thing that I kept was the aero bar. So, you know, like you, I still could be quite aero in them when I'm, when I needed. So when climbing, so yeah, the speed is not that high, so it was okay.
Cool. You know, we have a Telegram group in the podcast where I let the people know which interviews are going to be happening, and they can they can ask some questions. And these questions, they will arise here in the during the interview. But regarding your equipment, there was one question, a funny one, because if you see your bike and your shoes, as you said, you were not like in other races, like looking for the best performance and aero, but your helmet was aero, which is
why of course. Dude, because it's you know, you look fast, you feel fast, or you feel fast, you are fast. So it's like,
that's right, you're right.
And I think the helmet is okay. I use the same helmet, the same type of helmet in Tour Divide as well. So I love what Trek did with the helmet now, because even this Aero helmet has the space for the sunglasses. So even at night when you don't need sunglasses, there's no problem. Like with the previous generation helmet, you couldn't put the sunglasses in. So that was a really... really Aero helmet where it was not much more used than for Aero. This helmet is quite versatile, and I think it's well ventilated, so I was not overheating. And and you know, if you can save some watts, why not do that?
True. You said it this was your first time, your third time, I'm sorry, in Atlas. First one you have to scratch. Second, you came in second, and this time your goal, and you said it before, you were clear about that, it was to make it better than last year, so that means to win the race. And but the race was postponed 24 hours. What were your feelings in those 24 hours? Were you like, shit, again this year is something gonna happen that it's going to keep me away from this win, or were you still confident that it was all going to be like happening normal after those 24 hours?
We didn't knew, man. There was so much tension in the air, because at first I thought like, okay, we're not gonna start on Friday, so yeah, first thought was the flights that I might need to change, you know, and all this shit. The second thought was, okay, they said 24 hours, that we not be allowed to start for 24 hours. But I thought like, okay, let's wake up on Saturday, and if the weather is good, so maybe we will get to start at 12 or maybe at 3. But definitely not. We're not going to need to wait until 6. But we needed to wait. I mean, there was nothing. Nelson, I was having lunch with Nelson and breakfast, you know, and yeah, we are good friends, and he was calling everybody and nobody could give any answer. So actually, when we started the race, he was holding a speech and telling that the race is cancelled.
I saw that video. Yeah.
Because that's what he had to tell all of us. By the government, because the government didn't allow us to start. So he said he had to say, race is cancelled, do what you want, I'm not gonna stop you. And then me and Uber were in the front, and we were like, should we just go? Right, let's go. And we just
so you're in that riot, you and Uber.
Yeah, we are rebels, you know, we fight against the system. So, but yeah, the and so I had a clear goal or clear target, what I wanted to, how I wanted to do this race. But you know, like you saw, the field was so strong, like Mattia and Uba and Jens and Ali. The list just goes on, and there was like at least top 10, I don't know, 10 riders.
Definitely. That would
fight for the top 10, and it could go all the way. So, yeah, I was nervous, so I didn't know how it's gonna go. And with the, I thought like, okay, if we're gonna start into the rain, this might be good for me. But then when it got postponed and by 24 hours, and we knew that now the whole rain is over. Now we're just gonna have, because we knew the first night it would rain, but after that it would be fine weather and it's gonna be dry and good conditions for the rest of the race. And if the conditions are good for everyone, so it's not good for me.
But do you think, like, you training the whole winter long in Norway with minus 30 degrees, do you think that makes you stronger? And even if then the temperature is the opposite, you are somehow adapted to it, not to the temperature, but to the, I don't know, suffering or handling with those extreme conditions?
It is the theory that I have, yeah.
Right.
This theory is nothing based on nothing. It's just like the thing you have said, that these extremes, you know, extreme cold and extreme warmth, they are two extreme sides of the temperature scale. So if you're used to one of those, so I think you can adapt easier to another one. So, yeah, I think riding at very cold weather helps me mentally. Like, it's also unpleasant, same as it is riding in a very hot weather. So you basically just want to move or cover, at least be moving, not riding. I don't call it cycling, because at 40 degrees you are just trying to survive and you're moving, but like you're waiting until the sun gonna go down, the night will come, and then you can start pushing a bit. But until then, it is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how did you prepare your backpacking for a race that you knew it was going to be around 0 degrees at night up in the mountains, but then around 40 degrees in the during the day? Did you bring a lot of warm clothes, or you don't need them for just a short night?
The nights are long there, you know, the nights are 12 hours long.
Yeah, but for you, that you live in a constant night.
Exactly, this is another advantage that I have. For me, it's just 12 hours. So it's short night for me, so it was a bit funny. But I had some jackets, yeah, which I haven't used. I thought it's going to be colder. Like last year when we were racing, it was -8 and -9 degrees, and that felt really cold. So I remember using everything I had on me. While this year, even at night, sometimes the temperature was like 15, 20 degrees. It would drop very low when you get higher, and like at 5, you know, 5, 6 in the morning, just before the sunrise. So other than that, it would be okay. Like I had the long gloves, I didn't have the leg warmers, I just had the rain trousers, you know, that I used just for my, for extra insulation. And I had like a warm jacket, but I only used the rain jacket on top of,
really?
of jersey, and it was okay.
Mm-hmm. How many rivers did you have to cross at night, or it were cold?
Because of the rain, usually there's just one quiet. There's that one river. Now, I think the race organizer Nelson gonna call it Leveika Crossing.
Why that?
because that was the river, the crossing which has stopped us in 2022 when the flash floods appeared. So this or last year I could ride over that river. It was just like a stream. There was some water, but this year we could clearly see that river was really big, back to the same level as it was when I couldn't cross it.
Well,
so we had to get off our bikes, and there was a bit above the knees, and the water was still all like, you know, you can't see through. It's all like
muddy and stuff.
Very, very dark, muddy water, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how you did? So you put your bike on your shoulder and just ran?
Yeah. And went over, but I on the other side, because that was like 9 a.m, so it still wasn't very warm. So I just took off my shoes then on the other side of the river and squeezed my socks out so that they would get dry faster.
At that time, were you already leading the race, or?
We were three already in the lead. Yeah, me, Mattia, and Rikus. We had a gap. Actually, when we were crossing the river, some other guys came and also crossed the river together with us. But they disappeared as soon as we started riding faster.
Mm-hmm. So when did the front group spread? After CP1?
After CP1, because there were some crazy crosswinds and headwinds. The wind was crazy that night. So it was a storm in Morocco. It was quite a big storm that Friday. So I think the decision not to allow us to start on Friday was a good one, because we, even riding on Saturday, we still saw a lot of damage on the roads, on the rivers that were washed out, like, and there was a lot of, yeah, damage. There was a lot of mud on the road. There was a lot of landslides even on the main road, which is well maintained. There were a lot of rocks laying around because they were, yeah, they rolled down. So yeah, all this carnage, and it was still very windy the first night. So when we reached checkpoint one, I arrived there as third person, I think. And we just signed. I bought some water. I still had enough food, so I just poured the water into my backpack and get on my bike and left. And then I think Drikus was already, he was already in front. I was like number two. Uber have left together with me, but I think he stopped for PO to put on some clothes, and I have never seen him again.
What happened to him? Because it's not normal that he stays behind so early in the race, right?
He had some health issues before the race. So
yeah, he was missing the toilet quite often, right?
The sealant wasn't working very well. So it was leaking a bit. So I think he didn't have the full power. Or like he wasn't very, very well carb loaded because of the leaking.
But after 2 days or so, hell, he recovered.
Because then, you know, because that is a mistake, not a mistake. That is a disadvantage that becomes an advantage, because if you don't have a full power, you don't push or you don't over push. And then you start nicely and you have this possibility to increase your tempo and your speed. And that's what he was doing. I thought, like, at the fourth night, when I saw him passing Drikus on a map, on the dots, I thought, okay, now Uber's on a mission. Now he's coming after me. Now I'm next.
I thought it too. I was following your dots. I was like, what the hell? Is he on a motorbike or what?
Yeah. But that's typical, you know. This is But another thing that happened after or before the checkpoint one, I haven't, yeah, because yeah, my stories are still not uploaded and everything's not fully done. But I, yeah, for the first thing, so I started the race with a new SRAM transmission, the T-type yeah. transmission. Amazing thing, but like there's no B screw, there's no, you know, everything's like yeah, the direct mount and shit. So, but for the first time traveling with it, I still thought like I'm gonna just unscrew it and put it in there, just to not to ruin it or anything. Like, so I arrived in Morocco, I put it on, I went for a ride, everything was okay. I went for like leg openers, you know, intervals, and everything's okay. We start the race, everything's okay. We came to the first climb and I gear up and nothing happened.
Not again.
And that's because I did all the test rides on the flat and I only used the second half of the cassette. And when you adjust it, you have to put it in the sixth or seventh gear. And then you have to hold it and then you have to tighten it. So luckily I installed everything myself, so I knew how to do everything. So I think, yeah, I had to let the front group go. And I stopped in the village under the light. So I undid the axle, you know, I got this one, I tightened up, but I had only multi-tool. And there you have to tighten to 25 Newton meters. It's quite hard, so I just tightened so hard I could and start riding. The gears were working okay, but then we started this last climb, or like this, yeah, it's like 40 kilometer climb. It goes, yeah, it's quite long. I think it goes from like 500 meters to 2200, so it's a good climb.
Like Tayden.
But we did it at night, so I didn't saw anything, like nothing. But yeah, so as I was doing all these gear stuff and panicking a bit, I realized that I don't have my batteries.
No, that's such a Justina thing.
Exactly, Borja. It is such me, and I was like, you fucking idiot. Again. Like, one thing to do is like to, yeah. So no batteries. That means I own, but luckily I remembered to take a charger. So I had one battery in my gears and one charger.
Mm-hmm. And that was your advantage at the end, because
Nelson is laughing, and he will be laughing until, I don't know, he forgets about this, but he's saying that this was the best mistake I could ever make, that I forgot the batteries.
It looks like you always know the theory very well, and you say, yeah, that Uwe had these health issues was later on his advantage because he could spare some power. You know all of this. Every time I talk to you before the races, you are like, no, I learned the lesson. I'm going to start easy. But then it's like there is something that keeps you away from that idea and that pushes you and says, I don't know, if you are not leading the group from the very beginning, do you feel like, what do you feel? Nervous and comfortable?
It doesn't count. Then I'm not riding. If I'm not pushing hard, if I'm not, if I didn't gain a day's advantage on the first day, I'm too slow. Mm. But this is what Nelson was saying. Like, and I would like, really, I have never felt so good at the checkpoint 3 as I did this year, because I slept, because I had to stop. And every time I stopped to eat food, I put the charger, you know, to charge the battery. I think I finished with a full battery, actually. I was charging it like every single time I would stop. Because per day, like, you stop at least for once, for omelette, for a tagine, and it's always like a half an hour. So if that battery is not totally empty and you plug it to the wall, it charges quite quickly actually. So it's impressive. It was amazing to find it out. Mm-hmm. But again, yes, like to get to see this in practice, that sleeping makes you faster. Man.
Maybe now you learned the lesson because you experienced it.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to forget the batteries now for all the races. I will only take one now for the next races too.
Yeah. And can you remember how many times you stopped to take a nap or a long nap?
So first night we went through nothing. But then when the second night was approaching, I was again, I did a small mistake. I knew that the sun is rising and it will be hot during the day and the sun will be burning. So I left the merino base layer under, you know. So just thought like, okay, I'm not going to put the sunscreen on my hands. I will have this long sleeve. But merino wool is very good at protecting, yeah, from the sun, and it's, but since I had it under my jersey, so it was quite hot too, and the day was hot, so I lost a lot of salts. It was like a very good reminder to how I felt in Badlands, the first Badlands I did, when I had cramps everywhere.
And everything, yeah.
Yeah, so the same happened there, and we arrived at one village. Me and Mattia, we had a tagine and in a bar, and he would leave and he would drive further because he wasn't so tired. And I said, like, I can't continue, man. I need to lay down and try to get my salts back and just see if some rest will help. So I think I was the first one from the whole pack, leading pack, to take a night, like to stop for the night.
So that was the beginning of second night, like you were about...
Yeah, it's like 8 20, o'clock.
Like 26 hours in the race or something.
Yeah, 26, 27.
And at that point you took your first nap, like how long?
2 hours. I charged my battery, I took a shower, I washed all these salts, you know, and I changed my bibs.
Cool. That's something that you learned recently, right?
Exactly, man. This is like, I have done so many changes towards the comfort from the speed and light and performance. So now I'm all about the comfort. Like I'm becoming old. I'm becoming so boring. It's like so boring.
Next race, you know, with a Holland city bike. A cruiser bike,
because I will need more comfort.
And so that was in a hotel or something where you stopped?
Yeah, it was like a village, and the guy who had a restaurant, he had like 3 rooms upstairs, I think, or something. So
you stopped for 2 hours and then again 24 hours or more?
Actually, yeah, I had to stop for a short nap in a desert because there was a boring desert. I couldn't sleep much in those 2 hours. I was, because I was still cramping everywhere, so I was more like resting, hibernating. I can't say that, you know, that the time went fast, so it means that I wasn't just laying and looking at the ceiling.
Yeah,
but I also... We're not like I would wake up. I was awake and I was checking the phone sometimes.
It was like your RAM batteries and your body batteries were recharging. 2 hours. Yeah.
I was and then I stopped in a desert for like 20-minute nap on the ground,
and then
all the way to the checkpoint too.
Mm-hmm.
And I rode, yeah, through the night. I covered the distance through the night, and when I arrived to checkpoint 2, I think when I started riding after the night, so in the same hotel, when I came down to take my bike, Uba's bike was there as well, so he was sleeping in the same hotel. I think I was in fifth position or sixth, maybe, because a lot of guys chose to ride further. But I passed everyone, and when I arrived at checkpoint two, Drikus was also still sleeping in the checkpoint two.
Did you hear from Drikus before this race, or was he a new name for you?
No, it was a new name. It was a surprise.
What a surprise, right?
He is a strong man, man.
And he's a professional. Like, he was Namibia's world champion and ITT.
Yeah, tempo, like a time trial champion, also a triathlon, like a triathlon champion. And he was, I think, he almost made the two Olympics.
Yeah, and here is the question. In a roster where there is Drikus, a national champion, there is Mattia De Marchi, who is leaving from this sport. He's a professional cyclist. Uba, who is out of this world. And you, who works 40 hours a week. How do you manage to be in their same league? I mean,
I don't know.
You have supernatural powers?
No, I wouldn't say that. Like, is the same what you said? Like, yeah, I probably train like a professional, and
you train as a professional, but do you think you are as strong as them in terms of power, or your advantage is in terms of, I don't know, how you focus mentally in these races, your ability to suffer? What do you think your advantage is?
Aero helmet.
Your helmet, the aero one.
Nah, to put jokes aside, like, my advantage against Uba and Drikus was definitely that I have been to Morocco before.
Alright.
Even Drikus is coming from Namibia, which is also an Africa country, but still, Morocco is different, and by knowing the track a little bit and by being there before, so I have to admit that it makes an advantage to me. Also, because I've been there before, so I could optimize my equipment. I mean, the bike I was riding there, I only have ridden on snow and ice. I have never ridden it on gravel. I received it in like December, so it was already winter here, so it was no chance to test it. So first corners in Morocco, it was so sketchy because I was feeling that I'm still riding on ice and there's no grip. So so it took me some time until I could corner properly. But and you know, like, Mattia was just before the race, he started like uploading his power like intervals, you know, on social media, on Instagram, and showing the numbers, the crazy numbers that guy can produce. So I was like, dude, I mean, why are we even traveling to Morocco? Your legs are incredible. I mean, you have all the speed. But actually, Mattia is a fantastic guy. I love him so much. He is like a very, very down to earth, you know, he's a very simple man. So he said, like, but remember that the legs matter just for the first day, maybe too. The rest is up in your head, yeah. So if you, and I think I have, I have okay legs. But
just okay.
I have quite I have a good amateur legs and quite a strong head. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, I think it's that way too. And yeah, what did you feel when you were about to finish the race? Dricus had to scratch like 80 kilometers from the finish line or something like that. And I guess you knew already that you were going to win because Uwe was far behind. Were you happy or were you so exhausted that it's no way that you can smile, you can celebrate it? How did you feel? Did you feel empty? Did you feel so happy that you could celebrate it?
I mean, it was I didn't knew that Drake was scratched.
You didn't know? You didn't knew it?
No. Because he was pushing me so hard that I wasn't checking anything. Like, I was just riding. And I knew that I knew that if I'm moving, so it's going to be, he's going to have to move a lot faster to catch me. But as soon as I'm stopping and starting to stop, he's going to be catching me much faster. So I just had to keep moving. I remember maybe it was like 20 kilometers to finish. I was always looking there. Like, I was riding and I was like looking behind me. I knew that Dricus had 36 tooth chainring in the front.
36?
And I had 34.
He had a gravel bike. Or what?
Yeah, no, he had the same Super Caliber, Trek Super Caliber. But he had 36 tooth in the front and I had 34. I think you can get up to 38 or even 40 now. But so, and he is a time trialist and triathlon specialist. So on the tempo, he was unmatchable. Like, he was so fast. And I knew that the last like 50 kilometers is on the road. And we had slightly tailwind, so that was fast. I was already in my last gear and spinning. So I mean, it looked shit. I thought that this is it. I mean, he's gonna catch me, you know, and pass me with such speed that I'm not be able to even fight in the sprint. I wonder how that sprint would have looked, but I thought like,
how stressful, really, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was until I know later I saw that. So yeah, like when there was like 20 kilometers left, I saw that he's off the track and the control car is with him. But I still was thinking that he probably took a wrong turn and now they are just telling him that he has to go back and rejoin the route. And I knew that I have maybe not 15 minutes, but maybe half an hour now. So I still have to ride, and the sun was already up and it was like 35 degrees. And
so when did you first realize that you were going to win?
When I just entered Soria.
Really?
Yeah. It was no time. Like, it was.
Yeah. And what did you feel in that moment? Like, your biggest goal, you already achieved it, and but you are so exhausted at the same time. What were your feelings?
But it was a bit of everything, you know. I was clearly super happy and finally to do this, but also I was a bit of a like, shit, it was so hard. Because he pushed me all the way. There was not a single moment during the race when I could rest and like take it easy, you know. Usually in those races, I mean, you race for like a half duration of the race, then you either make a gap that big that you just need to maintain it, or you already are so far behind that only a mechanical or something can change everything. So like from the half of the race, usually it's a procession. It's like, but now
the job is done.
There was no procession. There was race for 1,350 kilometers. There was like, and that guy, Dricus, he has such a strong will that he can push over all his limits. He pushed until he couldn't push any longer. Like, he blacked out. So to have such a rivalry, now when I finished and I look back, it's an amazing feeling, because this victory tastes even sweeter, you know, because you had to fight so hard for it to get it. But at the same time, there and then, I was mentally exhausted more than I was physically, because all the time I had to think of what I'm doing. And you know, when you haven't slept properly for like 4 days, the thinking is not the best thing you could do. And you always have to remind yourself, yeah, keep pedaling, keep pushing, keep in the drop bars, or like in the hour bars, keep eating, keep drinking, don't let this go.
Come stressful, on, man, on. So stressful.
It was stressful, Borja, I can tell you. It wasn't a relaxed, you know, photo shoot, arriving and just posing. Oh, no, it wasn't that. Like,
yeah, you can imagine it's hard to celebrate when you are so exhausted. It's like you really want to finish, but not because of the whim, but just to really finish it and stop this nightmare, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I had, on top of all this, I had these flights to catch, you know. And I was like still thinking, but I was...
And you have to handle with your boss and explain why you're not going to be at work the next day.
Because it's easier to catch the flights and get to the job and to the work than to call the next day and say, like, you know what, I missed the flights and now I probably will not come back for Friday, so see you on Monday. but everything, all this, yeah,
we're touring in Morocco, and
it's just like you say, the main reason was so to,
it was like a,
yeah, come to the finish and end up
proper reunion,
all this. And now,
so those 2 days after,
but
finish,
also yeah, another point, what I had to say, like, when I saw that I'm gonna win, I kind of wanted to miss my flights, because such experience, man, like to win this race. And then to be able to celebrate, because there were so many friends in this race, doing the race. So people from Bright Midnight from last year, you know, like friends I've made and met in the other races, they were the people who arrived to the finish and just were touring in Morocco and went to came to visit. So it was like a proper reunion. So those 2 days after the finish, man, they were the best. Like, there was so much shit going on, and we had great times.
Yeah, big celebration. I bet it was the day after you won. Yeah, but, and yeah, if ultra cycling was like tennis with grand slams, you probably have made the three Grand Slams, the biggest, which are the Tour Divide in USA, the Silk Mountain Race in Kyrgyzstan, and now the Atlas, three times already. You have won the Atlas, and you've been second and third in the other two. For you, which one is the toughest? Maybe Tour Divide because it's so long, or the Silk Mountain mountain bike race, or which one is the toughest?
I would say, yeah, it's difficult to, yeah, I would agree with your ranking that this is like proper Grand Slams, and this is really something that everybody has to think about. But at the same time, like, I would say, yeah, Tour Divide is like Tour de France, you know. It's still the biggest one of all these three, because of the length, because of the history. Atlas, this actually, I have participated three times, right? But this was just the fourth edition.
True.
Yeah, so they have only had one before COVID. Then because of the COVID that it wouldn't happen. And then since 22, 23 and 24, now it was just the fourth edition. So it's a very young race. Silk Road is again, yeah, I would also say that this is one of the grand tours. But Tour Divide must be Tour de France, and these two others are younger, you know, the Giro and the Vuelta.
It's known by everyone that follows you that you like to come back to the races that you cannot win. Do you have your calendar for this year already in mind? Where you are going to be racing? Are you going to be back at the Tour Divide or the Silk Road?
I told everyone last year, and when I finished Tour Divide, that I'm not gonna go back there unless it's not gonna be out of my own pocket.
And it looks like you found your way.
And it looks like I have funding here for that race, so.
So maybe you are a bit professional now. Reading
Maybe I'm turning into that. But
this.
yeah, I mean, I still love my work, but yeah, the hobby is getting more and more serious now. So yeah, I'm gonna go back to overseas probably if everything's gonna go right. So I'll
Really?
be
So
back.
there are some rumors that maybe Lachlan Morton is going to be lining up across.
Yes, I heard that too. I heard that he's not so happy about his unofficial record. He wants an official record.
Wow. Does Uwe know about this? Is he going to be back again as well?
He's going back again
Really?
as well. Oh,
No.
probably, yeah. So I think there's gonna be a quite interesting rematch, yeah.
Do you think now that you've won in Morocco, you have gained more experience, you know which things you can do better in the Silk Road or the Tour Divide?
For Tour Divide, it's difficult to apply things because that race is so long and it requires, like, the simple thinking would be like, yeah, the comfort, I see that the comfort brings you or gives you a lot of speed. So that would be a thing to bring to Tour Divide. But because of you're riding for 14 days and over such long distance, so even my and Uber's front suspension forks, they didn't work at the end. They were done. So the more moving parts are on the bike, the actually the bigger disadvantage it
Yeah, so
is.
maybe a full
And
suspension bike.
especially if it's muddy and stuff, so it is not. I mean, it usually there's more things to break,
Yeah.
so I don't know. Like the thing is, I have learned a lot, and I would like to bring this learning to Tour Divide and to Kyrgyzstan, but the because of those races are so unique, you can't actually apply the same what worked for Atlas to those two and expect that it's gonna be the same.
Well, I wasn't in Kyrgyzstan, but the impression I got when I see the videos and when I see you like puffing blood up in the mountains, it looks like there you could have done better while taking a longer stop at the checkpoint, but you didn't do it. You went through,
No.
and maybe that's a
Was
lesson to learn there.
the stops and all this, like from the resting and taking care of myself side, yeah, I've definitely learned a lot, and I should start using not only the theory, but I should start using it in practice. because this is exactly what I did. I left at CP, I think there was CP2, the checkpoint 2 in Kyrgyzstan, where I arrived first. I had some dinner and I could go and sleep in a warm place. But I knew that Sofyan was on my heels, and he arrived and I was leaving. But he ate and he slept and he did everything there in a warm place. While I left, I maybe tried to climb up this first climb, which is called Old Soviet Road. And I had to sleep, and then I slept at minus 10, and then I got cold and I got sick, and it didn't end up well. But this is, you know, a thing that now I can't do anything about it. I just can learn from it and try not to repeat this again next year.
Do you still go to these races only with your emergency blanket, or now you carry something a bit thicker?
For the Atlas, I had quite a lot. I had a sleeping bag.
You did?
Yeah, I had a down sleeping bag. I wouldn't have survived, man. I would have died that in that night.
But you mean in Atlas or in Silk Road?
In Silk Road.
All right.
In Atlas, I had only emergency. But it was, I mean, it is like, you have to choose when to sleep. Because I was sleeping early in the night. So usually the temperatures were still too hot. I wouldn't even put my pants on. I would sleep in the bibs. And I always slept by 3 hours. That's also like, I think this is what made the race a bit unnecessarily interesting for you. Is that when we came down from Colonial Road, I stopped for some food. And then I started riding, and I rode for a while and started climbing, and then already had like maybe 2 hour gap on Drikus or something like this. It looked okay. It looked quite good. So I stopped for sleep, and I stopped, and I thought like, okay, I'm gonna sleep for 1 hour, maybe 1.5, because that's what you need to charge the batteries. And I put the alarm, and the next thing I wake up and I'm shivering and I'm cold, and I check the clock and it's 1 o'clock, and I went to sleep at 9.
Oh, 4 hours.
Yeah, so
was it outdoors or was it in a hotel?
Sorry?
It was in a hotel or outdoors?
No, it was on the road, on the side of the road, and it was like so much outside of the road that I couldn't see, or nobody could see me. So I was hiding kinda. But that also made that Drakus passed me without me noticing him. But I still arrived to the checkpoint 8-10 minutes ahead of him. So if I wouldn't have overslept by 3 hours, I could have had like 3 hour gap already on him in a checkpoint 3. And that I think would have taken down his team a bit, because he would see that this is maybe not so closable any longer. So he would maybe concentrate more on defending the second place from Uba instead of trying to catch me. And that could have been totally different race.
Yeah, but it is how it is.
But it was how it was, exactly.
Regarding nutrition and food, is it easy to find a lot of food in Atlas or in Kyrgyzstan? Or do you carry a lot of food with you?
I think it's easier to do that in Kyrgyzstan, actually, than in Morocco. In Kyrgyzstan, you know, in the shops you can get most of what you can get here. Like, you can get all the Snickers and you can get all the Twix and bars and all this stuff. While in Morocco, There's very little to choose when it comes. It's only like biscuits, and everything is very dry and very. Yeah, it's. You have to like omelets, or you have to like eggs very much, and old bread as well, because there's a lot of bread, but that bread is, yeah, it's not always very fresh one, so it's not very easy to chew it. So it's a different, yeah, and they. Yeah, sometimes take very long time to prepare anything. So I had a lot of food with me, and I even brought some food to the finish line, which I haven't eaten, because when I lost a lot of salts, the sweet food didn't taste any good. So I always wanted something salty. And by that time, I didn't have any more nuts, and my salty nuts were done. So I was buying these potato crisps, but in Morocco they sell it like the package is maybe 15 grams. There's like nothing in it. It feels like air. Mm-hmm. So you have to buy, I don't know, 20 of them and just like try to eat just to get some food out of it. And you know me, I like pickled things.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was having such a craving. I wanted something pickled, and I went to 5 different shops. I don't know. I wasted half an hour for looking for pickled. And the only thing I could find was olives, pickled olives. But they were in a bucket, and that bucket was with like a scum on top. And the guy just put the hand in and just took out some olives. And he was like, "Is it enough?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's okay."
More than enough.
I thought either I'm gonna puke or I'm gonna have a diarrhea, but it's the last day, so it doesn't matter. I just wanted something salty. So I would say that, yeah, Kyrgyzstan is easier to find, but in Kyrgyzstan there's more water. In Morocco the water is it can be very, very hard to find. Yeah.
And one thing I noticed when I was looking at your bike equipment. It looks like you had a dynamo hub, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And are you happy with that decision?
Very happy, because that's also, I started using dynamo from last year's Tour Divine. And since then in Kyrgyzstan, I also didn't want to do anything else but to have a dynamo. Because if the race is longer than 3 days or 3 nights, then it doesn't matter what light you have, you'll have to charge it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and with dynamo you don't need to charge it. The light is much stronger. The light is so strong, and so you can see so much. So you can be much faster on the downhills. You don't need to save the battery, you know, and use the lowest mode.
Which was your preferred one?
Exactly, because that's what I also used to do. I used to run the lowest setting and just about to see the trail. But when you are trying to ride fast at night, you have to see the trail, because otherwise you'll puncture, you'll crash, all these stupid things will happen.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was running Dynamo Hub. Yeah.
And one thing. When I was following you in Tour Divide, we all could see that you had problems with your derailleur, with your electronic device, the AX, and twice, I think you broke it twice. Why that? What happened? Is it better in such an adventure, regular derailleur with cable? Or are you happy with your electronic device there?
I don't know. Like, I know the reasons now. So the first time when it stopped working for me, it was because of the batteries. And it was because of the batteries. No batteries like to be discharged completely. You always have to leave a little bit in the battery so that you could charge it, blah, blah, blah. But usually you get the warning on the Garmin that the battery level is critical, charge it now. To save the batteries, I disconnected this function from Garmin so that this wouldn't show me. So I was able to discharge the batteries completely till they wouldn't shift anymore. Then I would try to charge it. And because of doing this, some batteries will not start charging because they are dead. They are completely flat. So that was the reason why the batteries wouldn't charge. The reason why the derailleur stopped working. At the end of the derailleur where you put the batteries, there are like two pins and they are on small springs.
Yeah.
They make sure that the battery is in contact. If those springs or there's some shit, and we had a lot of mud and rain and everything, and sometimes when you were changing the battery, the shit would get in those pins. So that's what happened. One of those pins got some shit on it and would stop working as it should, and then the contact would be too little, which would result in derailleur not shifting or miss shifting, like it would blink red and green and all together and wouldn't do anything.
And it got wood forever, or after the race you could clean it very well and get it working again?
I fixed it. I use it on, like, I use it every day on my other bike now, so
right.
No problem.
Right, so...
And even the batteries, I learned that you have to put it in and out, in, out, in, out, 10 times, and then they start charging.
When they are fully discharged.
Yeah.
Nice. Good to learn these tips from you.
Yeah, so you're welcome. If anyone will do the same mistakes, now you know how to do
it. I'm taking notes.
Yeah, but of course, like, if someone prefers fishing equipment on their bike, so they can use it, it's welcome. But I just love, you know, the way that you can make the cockpit so easily. Now, especially with the blips, you can just put them wherever you like it, and you can change gears in your aero position, on the hoods, on the drops, wherever.
Anywhere, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I love this because I feel that this makes me a little bit faster. So I'm willing to take the risk in order to be faster.
Cool. Looking back at your beginnings in this sport, ultra cycling, if you remember your first race, Transpirines, that really I was lining up together with you there. That year, you came in finish line fourth after Uba, yeah. After Sofian, and Omar Di Felice.
Yeah.
You were a newbie, a rookie, but you got in fourth. Now, looking backwards, what do you think you have learned from that year now that you could improve in that race with all the experience you have
first,
now?
First of all, the way I opened the race.
That's still good. Nowadays.
But if you think I'm crazy now, so then I was completely crazy. I remember... Oh my god, I did the first like 6-7 hours of that race as it would be last 7 hours of the race. it was crazy. Also, yeah, I didn't knew what to expect or how to ride through the night, or like I didn't had much experience with this. So remember, I stopped at one bench and I was trying, like, yeah, sort out where I'm gonna go and how I'm gonna go, and then I would fall asleep, and then I slept like maybe for 2 or 3 hours, and I woke up and I was like already, yeah, 8 or 9 something. So the pacing has changed even, yeah. So not like I'm completely cured all my bad habits, but I'm much better than I was. So and the bike setup. What bike I was using for that race? It was a race machine. It was a very fast bike, a very light bike. It was 100% performance orientated. Nothing for comfort. The bar tape was minimalistic, so my hand, I didn't have any feelings in my fingers after the race. My knees, I think, were gone. My Achilles were gone because of the shoes I chose and everything. My seat was, yeah, it was a race saddle, so I had terrible saddle sores. And because of the saddle sores, I would need to stand up more. And then because of I would need to stand up more, my Achilles got infected, not infected, but inflamed. So all these small mistakes, you know, in ultra races, they go like a snowball. It becomes just bigger and bigger and bigger. And at the end, it's like, so just by having more comfort on that bike that year and pacing it differently, who knows? Maybe I could have shaken the whole ultra world by coming, you know, to my first race and already doing better than I did.
Well, you're shaking it already now. Yeah. You became one of the biggest names, man. You're a rock star.
Fuck. And all started with Palmira, right? Palmira and Cicla Factoria jersey on, which is still my, to this day, my favorite jersey.
That was in your beginnings.
Yeah.
We were very, very happy and glad to have you in our colors.
Yeah, but this is, you know, this is where our first victory came from. Rwanda, it was in Cicla Factoria in Palmira jersey.
True. That jersey, I have it myself now.
Yeah.
We changed it. It's all still almost black because of the...
Yeah, it has still the dust and all the shit from
the... All the dust in Rwanda. Yeah. You're definitely one of the big names now. You know that. And not only because you're doing so well while racing, but also because you're now organizer yourself of your own race. And that's maybe the last point I would like to talk about in this interview. And I told you already when we were there in Norway, but now I tell you again here officially. Congratulations for that first edition of the Night Bright Midnight, which was amazing. It's really amazing to ride in Norway. No, like, sunlight the whole day, no dark, beautiful landscapes. How was it for you as an organizer? Is it, because it really looked very, very stressful. Do you prefer, is it for you more stressful to organize than to ride the race?
I would say 100%. It's much easier to ride a race than to organize one, because when you organize a race, you don't sleep before, you don't sleep during, and you don't sleep after.
And if your house is the official hostel of everyone that comes and knocks the door,
it was an official ultra house here, yeah, but. Otherwise, it's a shithole. I don't like this house at all. But when all the riders were living here, it was, for me, as a gypsy, I love you as a gypsy king. You will be forever a gypsy king. But I can be a gypsy prince. I love when there is chaos and there is a lot of this thing going. So for me, the atmosphere was incredible. I loved it very much. Like, this is what I want to create this year too, that the riders who would come to this race would experience also the same, like, to be part of something big of the community is amazing. We have such a incredible people around us doing those races, so just to be, yeah, to meet more, to talk to more people and to make more connections, because the race, it comes and goes, but the friends stay, you know. So you make the friends, you meet them later, you have shared an adventure which you can always talk about and remember and have a laugh and just, yeah, remember the times, remember how wet it was and it rained for 2 days and it was fucking awesome.
Yeah, man, true. And for this year, are you changing some parts of the route? It's going to stay to be the same one?
It's going to be more ultra, more challenging.
Really? In which sense?
Yeah. So I'm adding 100 kilometers.
Whoa.
And 5,000 meters of elevation.
Luckily, I'm not lining up this year.
So, no, but dude, this is going to be, you'll be climbing and you'll be enjoying it, because the climbs, there's going to be, yeah, two more climbs, which goes from zero to hero. So one climb is going from zero to 1,000 meters. So that's quite a... Dalsneba is going to be there, yeah. This is also from 0 to 1,400. So there are a couple of those 0 to heroes. But in general, so there's another amazing loop. I scouted it last August before going to Silk Road with Veronica Salas. We went on a 2-day trip riding that loop, the new loop around the Jotunheim National Park. She was so impressed about that. I mean, she couldn't put the camera down. She was just taking pictures of everything. It was, and we had good weather, you know. We stopped for a BB spot at night or night. It was already nights. By August, it's already dark, yeah. But so we would ride at daytime and we just enjoyed it very much. So again, if someone is coming to do it in a race pace, yeah, it's an experience, you know, and because it never gets dark, so you kind of don't miss anything. As here in Morocco, you know, the night is 12 hours. So it's like 48 hours that I haven't seen anything.
Yeah.
And it is a beautiful country, and I know this, and it's a shame, but in bright midnight, you can ride all the time, and you see, and if you're fast, so you're fast, but you still see everything.
Are there still free slots, or it's all...
Yeah, we still have some. I haven't, because I've been away riding, you know, so I haven't been pushing sales too much. I have to get back showing the beauty of the race and trying to get more people to come and do it.
Cool, man. I don't know how you can handle with everything, but congratulations. Like working, training, organizing, I don't know, man. How many hours does your day have?
Still, but like Josh Ibbett says, like, I'm burning the candle from both ends, you know, like it's gonna... Nah, but I hope, or like, I think I'm taking care of myself as well a bit.
I hope so.
A little bit. But, and I have more projects to come, my friend.
Really?
You'll get to hear about them soon, yeah.
Cool. And maybe we'll have to connect again soon when you have these new projects.
Definitely, definitely. There are some interesting stuff on the way.
Cool. I can't wait to hear it. Well, it was amazing to have you back in the podcast, to hear your experience, to see you again. And yeah, keep doing the way you're doing, keep smiling the way you smile, and keep writing as well. I'm sure you will be doing great this year again in Tour Divide. Oh, I hope you achieve your goals like you did in Atlas. And this year I'm not going to be able to come back to Norway. I have to work here. I have other races in my calendar. But man, I don't know. When are you going? Are you gonna come here to Zaragoza to pick up your Palmira bike, or?
Yeah, I know that I have my bike there standing. So and but I know also that it is decorating a wall in a cafe, right?
It is. It's a good spot.
Exactly. I wouldn't use it that much at the moment, anyway. So I'm having it. I'm representing Palmira in a much better way, I think.
Nice.
But definitely, man, I'm coming. I know that you guys are also gonna have a birthday in April, right? And
on the 14th of April, yeah.
Yeah, you'll be celebrating, but maybe I'll be riding not so far from Zaragoza because I'm gonna do Desert Uzbekus.
Really? All right.
And it has a checkpoint in.
Yeah, it's not that far. Yeah, true.
No. Maybe I'll take a detour, you know.
Cool.
Just to, because it's a free route race, so I can do whatever I want.
Then please do it.
Yeah.
You know you have here shelter.
But the 24 started, you know, like last year when I started 24, I also did the Fat Viking, the Winter Ultra, and I was second there. Then I went to Atlas and I was second there. So this year I took the first place in the Winter Ultra, and now I took first place in Atlas.
And what are your next races? Because we haven't gone through your calendar yet.
No, but I haven't, like, the one confirmed is Desert Uzbekus in April. And I'm looking for something in March, but I think I'm going to go to France to my friend Steven's race that starts in I think in the Easter weekend as well, like 27th of March, I think. Then for May, I'm thinking about Cromwell, maybe.
Really? Amazing.
Yeah. And
And there is the one in Termes 53 in Mallorca, where I'm gonna be. So, well, either one of Cromwell or the one in Mallorca, Termes 53, are amazing. So it would be so nice if you come to one of those.
Yeah, we'll see. But as I said, like the things I have the big ones confirmed. That was Atlas, and there was that Tour Divide.
Not Kyrgyzstan this year.
I'll see how it's gonna go after Tour Divide and Bright Midnight.
Okay.
I think and I believe that Tour Divide is a good preparation race for Kyrgyzstan, but not many other people think so. So I don't know. I don't know. I still had enough power last year, but just made some stupid mistakes. So maybe I'll go back here, back there, and don't do stupid mistakes and just ride through.
I don't know why, but I'm sure they're gonna go back to Kyrgyzstan.
It is a country that is so crazy, so crazy.
Cool. Well, Justine, we'll be following you and we'll keep in contact. Thanks a lot for this time, for your time, this interview, and keep in touch.
That was a pleasure, my friend, you know this. And just to see you and to catch up with you. Yeah, maybe we have to do a podcast to do that, but still, I love it. And living the life, you know, living the life.
Okay, my friend, keep in touch. See you soon.
See you and bye-bye. Bye.
This is a podcast about cycling and ultra cycling in particular.